Hello, babies. Thank you so much for listening to the latest episode of Nocturnal Emissions. I have a special guest, my dear friend, Amy Simon, who's going to come on. Amy is a blogger, an interviewer, a movie critic, and a mouth guard champion. So she's going to come on and we're going to talk about the state of horror films, what we're watching right now, being a woman in the industry. And also other things, Stephen King, Karen Kusama, we talk about it all. Please enjoy this episode, and I will see you later. Mwah!
My name is Amy Simon, and I am the director of marketing for a small marketing agency called Smart House Creative. That's my day job. And then just for funds, I write about film for threeimaginarygirls.com and then also about horror movies specifically for my blog called ilovesplatter.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you making time to come on and talk. You and I know each other. How do we know each other? I can't remember where we met.
I actually first saw you at Crypticon probably three years ago. Mm-hmm. And I noticed you because I really liked your style. So I think you were wearing like a beret, and you just, you know, I don't know. You just look very put together and very cute. And I complimented you on that very nervously as I passed by you in the hallway. And then you came to a panel that I was on called Women in Film, which is like, of course, the most general title of anything. But you asked some good questions and I was just like, yeah, like I like that girl. And then later, I think I saw you again somewhere and somebody I knew was like, oh, that's Isabella Price. And I was like, oh, great. Now I know her name. But that's kind of as far as it went until I think I met Colleen and then Colleen knew you. And then, oh, and then that was actually how we officially met, was the Central Cinema talk about The Descent, but before The Descent.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. So.
Yeah. So you, me, and Colleen, we hosted a screening of The Descent. And we did a screening and we also did a talk kind of beforehand, which was so much fun.
Yeah.
That was a really great kind of conversation. I think that was the first time that anybody had ever asked me my opinion about horror films, like asked me versus being forced to listen to my opinions about horror films. And so that was like, God, that was so much fun. Yeah, that's right. Was that 3 years ago? It feels...
That talk, I think, was more like 2 years ago.
Okay.
Maybe a year and a half, because it was like in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we were on, you invited me onto your panel at EuroCon, which was so much fun. What was the title of that panel again?
Final Girls versus Scream Queens.
Yeah.
And I'm working on something else sort of related to that I might be able to talk about soon. So.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
And that was really great. Like being on these panels is really cool because you get to meet other people who are kind of in the same vein as you are, you know,
yeah.
And then you would never know who's in the audience, you know, and how you're going to connect to other people. And so are you going to Crypticon this year?
Yes.
Okay.
I am going to interview Dee Wallace. I'm going to host that interview. I'm very excited. And I'm also going to host the interview with Cheryl Lee and Ray Wise from Twin Peaks. Last year, I got to host the interview with Kimmy Robertson and Andy Goes of Twin Peaks. And that was like just, first of all, I was like totally blown away that I got to do that. But secondly, it was just like a lot of fun. So I'm doing that. I'm doing a couple of panels and it's like almost everything's on Saturday. So basically Saturday is going to be like an insane amount of stuff. But yes, I love Crypticon. And this year they have so many 80s horror film stars that I am like stoked about it. So
yeah, the, his name escapes me. He's the smoking man from the X-Files this
Yes, William
year.
Davis. Yeah, he's so great.
Yeah, he makes me so mad. I'm so angry at him. I hate him. I recently saw this episode of Sabrina, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina,
Yeah.
and he's in it. And I just like, as soon as he showed up on screen, I like hit the pause button. I was like, no, not you. Anybody but you. I
Oh man, I have not started season two yet of Sabrina, but I loved season one, so I'm excited to watch season two.
Season two is more bananas. It's more of that, it's more Satan puns.
Yeah.
Nobody does Satan puns more than the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. And it's just like, it's so much like hot dudes that you should not feel are hot, you know? It's a lot of just see, the thing is, I said I was going to stop when I watched season one because I was like, I feel dirty watching the sex lives of these teenagers. So being like an adult and like I stopped watching Riverdale because I was like, all
I'm still
these
into it. Yeah. Still
all
into
these
Riverdale.
teens, all these teens are just like, they're just having sex. I can't, this is awful. I can't do this. And now the Chilling Adventures, it's the perfect cross between like that teen melodrama that I just love, you know? And then just like straight horror. Every single time there's like a horror movie reference or something like that in it, I'm just like, oh, this is for me. I understand now.
Yeah, there's so many in there. I love that they had like the glass ceiling from Suspiria is like in their house. I'm like, what? How did that? I don't even care.
Yeah.
And Madame Satan is like my idol. I just want to be this woman who drops like the best one-liners and eats men for sustenance.
Gonna like the second season because it's more of a development of her character, and so she's really fascinating, you know, like from going from sort of the straight villain character into having this really interesting personality. It was really great. Like the last episode, I think I was watching last night. They had a character, and they introduced her as like Miss Jackson, and then later on in the episode, they were like, "Oh, Shirley," and I was like, "Shirley Jackson? You think I don't get this reference? I got this reference." It was like, it was so good. So, highly, highly recommend Chilling Adventures. Are you watching anything else right now?
Well, I just started watching Game of Thrones, which of course is not horror. Well, I mean, some of it is, but
And the rest of the nation, yes.
I just watched the new Critters series. A new binge, which was actually, I really thought it was a lot of fun. There's been a lot of complaints about that. I've seen a lot of people bitching about how it doesn't fit into the Critters universe, and I don't really understand that because it's not like the Critters movies are
Yeah.
that developed or smart
Yeah,
or,
it's not like
you
it's
know.
Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, I rewatched the first Critters in preparation for the D, you know, my Dee Wallace interview because I hadn't seen it in a long time and I actually forgot she was even in it. It's been that long since I've seen it. And it's just a dumb sci-fi movie. And the new binge, which is what they're calling the series, is basically like Gremlins 2. If like Gremlins 2 was a series, it would be Critters and New Binge. Like the Critters act in all these crazy ways. There's like a ton of meta movie references. There's like an Avengers Infinity War reference. There's like a Wrath of Khan. I mean, it's just, and it's written and directed by the guys that did Zombievers, which I don't know if you've seen, but like the title basically says it all. You know,
Yeah.
it's Zombie Beavers. And
Criterion.
there's like a ton of like in jokes about vaginas and beavers and and so like it was fine. And then the other thing that I liked about it, and I thought it was just dumb, stupid fun with a ton of really dumb puppets, was that they actually have a diverse cast of teenagers. This is not like the CW like Riverdale teenager. This is like the fat kid, and the smart Asian girl. She's not even a stereotype, but she's like this beautiful, smart Asian girl. And then his best friend, and it's not, they just seem like normal teenagers. So I just greatly appreciated that. While I love Riverdale, And while I love Sabrina, come on, everybody on that show is like super good looking. Even like the awkward teenage girls on Chilling Adventures are like super hot.
Yeah, I mean, I heard people were complaining about it, and it just looked like it was supposed to be dumb fun, It didn't look like it was supposed to be anything serious, And so when people were critiquing it, I was like, what were you expecting? Were you expecting like the Citizen Kane of Critters movies? It doesn't, I don't understand that.
I mean, on the contrary, so like in contrast, I also watched Puppet Master: The Littlest Reich, and
Well.
yeah, and like, listen, I mean, I grew up in the 80s, and the Full Moon Entertainment was like in very popular when I was in my early 20s, so I was very into Full Moon Entertainment movies, and they are, sexist and dumb and over the top and totally cheesy. While it's not a Full Moon Entertainment production, it is based on these Full Moon Entertainment characters, but it's written by Craig Zoller, who did Bone Tomahawk and Cell Block 99, Brawl in Cell Block 99. And so I was like, oh, it's probably like pretty smart. And Barbara Crampton's in it, and she's great, of course. But it just was like so. And offensive is not the right word, but it was like the gore was so gory that it was almost ridiculous, but not in a good, like dead alive way. Just like, I'm just gonna say it, I'm gonna say it, and like, I'm sorry for anybody who I'm spoiling this for, but there's a scene where one of the puppets actually crawls into a woman's vagina, a pregnant woman's vagina, rips himself out of her with the fetus in its arms, and then like drags, they show it like walking away, this puppet with like the fetus's umbilical cord like dragged with it. And I'm like, I just like what is the point of that? I guess that it seems like the only point is to be gory and to try to be shocking,
Yeah, I mean, I'll be very honest. Like, I was waiting for a person of color to tell me about this movie because I'm like, please, somebody. I'm like, I don't have the time. There's so many other things I need to see right now. And so I was like, somebody else tell me what this movie is because I think you could, especially during now, during these times. You could say so much with this movie. You could actually make a really kind of like subtly intelligent thing. I'm not saying like you have to make this really, culturally changing film inside of a killer puppet movie, but you could say something about what's currently going on right now. And I was just like, if I watch this movie and it's just like jokes at a Nazi puppet's expense, like I'm good.
It's not even that. It's like it's clearly made. It's not made for me, obviously. It's made for bros. Like let's, it's just made for bros. Like that's who it's made for. It's just a lot of really insane gore with a very thin premise, which is fine. Critters is also that, but it's just the stark differences between those two are really telling to me. It's like Critters is just like fun. It's just like a fun little ride with stupid puppets, and Puppet Master is like Barbara Crampton killed it, of course, because she's Barbara Crampton and she plays a cop, which is also great because how often do you see a woman play a cop, who like is smart and knows how to do things? But it's like about a bunch of puppets under the command of a Nazi puppet creator. So the puppets are murdering gay people and black people and Jewish people and that's it. There's no redemption. There's no, that's it. They just slaughter a bunch of people because they're Nazi puppets. And that's the whole movie. There's
Thank you
like,
so much.
that's all you need to know.
I just had a feeling. I had a feeling that like I didn't need to, that I could, this is when I could pass, and I feel like in a world full of like Jordan Peele's, where we're just getting so much good content out there, where just the bar just keeps going up and up and up, I'm not gonna use the dreaded elevated horror. I'm not gonna use that term, you know.
Yeah.
But the bar's been raised, you know. Over this past, I would say, 10 years, we've seen horror movies, the quality and the substance of horror movies go up and up. And so to go and watch something like that, I'm just kind of like, but there's a whole list of South American horror movies I really need to see right now, and Asian horror movies I really like to see, and there's, horror movies that are shorts that I really want to see right now that I'm just like, I could, you know. But it was really like in the horror community, fan community, everybody was talking about that movie for a really long time, and I was like, really? This one? This is hot right now? Okay, all right. So,
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The other one is like Pet Sematary, which I also saw and I didn't like, but that movie is very divisive. People seem to be either loving it or hating it. I was into it for a while and then it got to the third act and I was like, oh, this is really dumb. But I don't know. I just felt like the changes that they made didn't have the same poignancy. And I, as the story, as the original story, or as the 89 movie, and I rewatched the 89 movie, which is of course like campy and kind of ridiculous, but it still seems scarier to me. Like, I'm not gonna spoil anything for anybody here, but I found the changes that they made to be less scary. And they said that they made them because they thought they were scarier, but they're not. They're not.
You know, it's so funny because it's like I was anticipating that movie for so long, and I didn't go see it. I mean, I still plan on seeing it sometime soon, but it kind of disappeared. It was like it came out, and then it was just over with. You know, it was the same thing with like the Hellboy movie. It was
Oh,
like
yeah.
people were so anticipating it so much, and it came out, and then it was just like, all right, well, Game of Thrones is coming out, so let's all talk about that now. It just sort of disappeared, and that to me is like that's a bad sign, you know, that as soon as something comes out in the theaters, that the conversation stops. That's no good. And I heard lukewarm things about Pet Sematary, and I heard bad things about Hellboy.
Yeah, the Hellboy thing that I've noticed is that it seems like it's doing that thing where critics are really laying into how terrible it is, and then fanboys are like, oh, it was awesome. No, those critics don't know what the fuck they're talking about, which is like, sure. I think what everybody forgets is that critics are just like people, you know? Like I write about film, but I'm just a person. And so my personal opinion is always going to play into my criticism, just like anybody else's criticism, you know? And there are going to be some critics who, you know, just catch on to the zeitgeist of what's happening. Or a lot of times, like when I was going back, I just got added to Rotten Tomatoes. And so I had to go back through all of my reviews and put them all up on there. And there were like a lot of movies that I love now that I hated when I saw them, and a lot of movies that I loved when I saw them that I hate now. So, like, you're allowed to change your opinion about things. And nobody's saying that because all these critics hated Hellboy now that they're not going to like it in another 10 years. But also, nobody's saying that they will. But also, why does it matter? You know?
I mean, there was a oh, what's the man? I'm so bad with names. The name of the actress who, she's from all the Resident Evil movies.
Oh, Mia Jovovich.
She was recently quoted for this movie of being like, all of my movies live on as fan favorites, as cult classics, and this movie will probably be, no shade to her whatsoever, but I know that if she's in a movie, the movie's not going to be the greatest movie. No shade to her whatsoever, but I've seen every single Resident Evil movie, and I saw her Three Musketeers movie. I don't know if you remember that. She is a natural talent for getting into a film that is not the best, and I feel like that's a career choice. And so as soon as I heard that she was going to be in this, I was like, well, I know what kind of movie this is going to be. And so, I think that that's fair. The thing with critics is that they watch so many different kinds of films, And when you are just watching so many, the gamut of films, you're putting film into the running with all these other films, you know? Whereas if you're a fanboy, you're watching kind of the same movies over and over again. You're watching a specific kind that's, you have your taste, and you don't have to watch all the different kind of movies that are out there because it's not your job to, you know? And so when you're just watching the same kind of movies, I feel like some rise to the top, but it's a very narrow kind of running versus when you're a critic and you have to watch everything, you know? It's different. I mean, people are so hard on critics, and I'm just like, I mean, like, A, it doesn't matter what anybody says, you could still like a movie regardless.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's not like the critics board is like, or you know, the critics groups are like holding people by gunpoint, and like, you know, if you see a movie they don't like you lose like 3 months off of your life or something like that, you know. Even though I've seen some movies where I feel like, oh yeah, I definitely am gonna die young. So you know, like it's so bizarre to me. And being in fandom, you know, I mean, like the horror community can sometimes get a little can get a little too much. But speaking of your role as critic, I want to talk about your blog and how that started and what kind of content do you put on your blog?
Well, for I Love Splatter, I think I started that, I want to say about 10, maybe 10 years ago. And it was just born out of my, like, you know, I love horror film. I love talking about horror film. I am a Gen Xer, and so I grew up in a time where women were not expected to like horror films, you know, and so it wasn't something that I talked about a lot. I mean, I grew up, you know, watching like Elvira hosting stuff and like watching all the Vincent Price movies on Saturdays and Sundays and watching all the Godzilla movies and just like love them. And then Dressed to Kill, Dressed to Kill was coming on. I love Brian De Palma, by the way. Dressed to Kill was coming on like Showtime or HBO, one of the cable channels that my parents had. And I begged them to watch it. And like, 'cause I was just so intrigued by these previews with like the straight razor, and I wanted to know what was happening. And I think I was like 10. I think I was 10 at the time. And they're like, "No way, you are too young. You know, you're gonna have nightmares." And I'm like, "No, I'll be fine. I'll be totally fine." And then we watched it, and I had nightmares. And my parents said, "That's it. You're not seeing another horror movie until, or scary movie, you know, 'cause that's not really considered a horror movie, but it's scary. You're not watching another one until you're 13." And then A Nightmare on Elm Street came out when I was 12. And all of my friends were talking about it. All of my friends were older. They were all going to see it like 3 and 4 times. And I was like so upset that I couldn't see it. But my dad, it came out on VHS before my birthday. And so for my birthday, my dad and mom rented it, and you know, they got pizza, and I invited my friends over. And then my dad, we lived in a split level. He put on a dirty hat and he ran up the stairs with an actual chainsaw about 15 minutes into the movie and just like revved the chainsaw up and like, I know. So, but I think like that, I like thank him for that, because I think that that like heightened my awareness and my love. You know, and it's part of the reason why the A Nightmare on Elm Street is one of my favorite movies ever, and definitely jump started my love of horror movies.
There
But
was no way that my parents would have ever let me be friends with you after I've gone home and told them what happened, and they would be like, you're never allowed to hang out with this girl.
know. Yeah, I think like I think that that didn't happen because all of the people with me were, I think, like 14, 15, and even 16, just because I like lived in a neighborhood where everybody was older than me. And they probably didn't tell their parents because they were like scared, and they didn't want to admit that they had been scared, especially because it was like a couple of football players, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean that that sort of like jump started me into this, like going to rent videotapes all the time and recording everything that I could find and diving into the horror genre. So Nightmare on Elm Street is like, it's so good. But also around that time, particularly in middle school, like all of these movie adaptation novels were coming out, and all of those novels had pictures. And all of the horror movie ones had pictures. I talked about this a little bit on the Emerald City Comic Con panel I did, but the, you know, boys would have these books and they would be passing them around on the bus to these other boys, and then they would show them to girls with the intention being that the girls would be like, "Oh, gross, I'm so scared," you know, but I would get it and I would be like, "Whoa, what what is that? Is that going into his eye?" You know, like try and then boys would be like, "What?" You know, because it's, you know, like anything else. Like I was also a huge Star Wars fan, but you know, my male cousins are like, "You can't like Star Wars. You can only like Princess Leia," you know, and that is the attitude that we grew up with. This, you know, in some ways has changed and in some ways it hasn't. But I do find that that attitude amongst Gen Xers and boomers still exists now, you know, and it's just, I find it hard to talk about sometimes because I feel like I'm being a hysterical woman who's complaining about nothing. But it sucks, you know, it sucks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, it's so much of the media has been targeted towards men and it's had this sort of male gaze to it. You know, so I think that for people to imagine that a woman fits into that gaze at all is really, really mind-blowing, you know. And it's so frustrating because of the fact that like now I'm so much into this thing of like horror can come from a female perspective. There's so much horrific about being a woman, you know? And so, you know, I think that for a lot of guys, it has felt like a safe space for them to explore these really dark tendencies and these really dark proclivities, especially their feelings towards women. I think it's been like a safer space for them to explore those feelings and, you know, things like that, which is what horror does. Horror is a safe space for you to explore your darker feelings, your darker emotions. And a lot of those are geared towards women. And to have a woman in that space is almost threatening. You know, as like a way of being like making you uncomfortable about how much, you know, questioning, saying, you know, I really don't like it when it's just a bunch of like women being ripped apart, like, you know. And like acting like that's ruining the spoiling the fun, you know, it's just like, I man, it's just like, it's not, we've, you know, we've been through decades of this, like, is it a time for something else, you know? And so that's why I think it's really interesting what you're doing, because you're really carving out a space, you know. You're taking what you're already interested in, where you already are in your life, and saying like, you know, I have had this passion for a really long time. I'm here. There's other people like me, you know, there's an audience for this and there's room for discourse, you know, versus just sort of being like making yourself smaller or kind of erasing your voice, you know.
I think, and I think like now, I think, you know, younger generations get it. And like there is room, but it's just like my generation and the generation that came before me, they're these men act as gatekeepers, you know, Gamergate, you know, for anything, comics, movies, you name it, like they're there and they're like, no, like women are ruining everything with their fucking social justice warrior bullshit, you know, and it's not like this stuff that we're talking about didn't exist before. It's just that we were too fucking scared to talk about it because we get smacked down every time we try to bring it up, you know? And there's nothing wrong with trying to change things and make them better. And there's nothing wrong with liking the things that are problematic either, you know? Like, I like plenty of movies that are problematic. Does that, you know, doesn't mean that my childhood's ruined or that I can't enjoy them anymore. It just means we don't need to keep making those same types of things. There's no reason for it, you know?
I mean, like, there's so much stuff that I'm like, you know, I know this is trash. I know it's bad, but I still love it. I still think it's great, you know? And it's really interesting to me, because I'm coming at it not only from like a female perspective, but also a perspective from a black person,
Yes.
And so like coming from this perspective of being like, okay, let's have a conversation about these things. And for me, having a conversation doesn't ruin it. Most of the
Right.
time, a conversation is adding to my enjoyment of something, I'm doing this I'm presenting Candyman tomorrow.
Yes.
So I have to go back. Candyman's like one of my favorite films of all time. It scared the crap out of me as a kid,
Yeah.
But like when you watch it now in like a 2019 lens, you're like, oh, okay, there's some problematic elements of this that I'm picking up on, And it doesn't take away my enjoyment of that movie whatsoever. It just makes me understand like what media does. What media, the kind of reactions that we have to media, it's just adding this layer of savviness and intelligence, that is not bad. It's not bad, I'm still scared. I still will not say Candyman 5 times in a row.
I will not either. And I was like in my 20s when that movie came out, but it still scared the shit out of me. I mean, in particular, it scared me from the perspective of when she's when Virginia Madsen's in the asylum and they think that she's killed all these people, because that is a real fucking thing that happens to women. It happens all the time to people, but it particularly happens to women where, well, you're the hysterical female, and of course what you say can't be true, so we're just going to drug you up and lock you in here.
Right. And there's so many of this element of like, is she crazy? And like Candyman is like gaslighting her throughout this entire
He totally is. He
film.
totally is. Just because he wants her to be his girlfriend. That's the only reason.
I know, and like the whole entire time I was like, man, this movie is the Phantom of the Opera. Like, he's like sing for me. He's like so obsessive. I'm like, get over her, God.
You know what's so funny is that I met Tony Todd at Crypticon actually, and I was like determined to make like I was like, okay, I'm gonna get this photo with him and I'm gonna act scared, and then he just gave me like this giant hug, and so in the photo I'm just smiling like a fucking maniac, like he's like the happiest guy on earth, and I'm just like, oh
It's hard not to. He's so charming. He's like, he's
yeah.
so tall and he's so charming. And like this film is so interesting because he had like Shakespearean training, and it really comes out in his acting. And it's just the movie is it's not without its problems. It's depiction of the projects, and this sort of it views the projects from this very white lens.
Oh, yeah.
This very like sort of like the jungles of the ghetto, and like
Yeah.
little white girl that's going into this like terrifying place, which is super, super problematic. The way that I viewed it was like the projects, they serve a role as haunted house, and the project is this haunted house. Unfortunately, the ghosts and ghouls of this haunted house are just black people.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about that though is that they have Cassie Lemons as her friend, and but like Cassie Lemons literally says nothing of consequence about the Cabrini Green, like she just goes with her
Yeah,
and
that was my
she's
whole
acting
problem.
just like Virginia Madsen, basically.
That was my whole problem is like not a single time does she internalize any of the like racial violence or anything like that. And like if you had if a black person is going through all of this stuff, there would at least be one point in this movie where she would be like, "You're being a real white girl right now. I really need to I really
Sure.
Because like you're putting me in danger right now. I would need you to stop being a white girl and like you're doing some real white girl stuff.
Yeah.
Can you stop? Like,
Like, first of all, you're never going to get in there without people thinking you're police.
yeah.
One, but yeah, no, for sure. It's written by a white guy, it's directed by a white guy. So I feel like the remake is probably going to blow it away in terms of what can be done.
I'm
You
super
know?
excited.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be
Yeah.
so good.
It's because it's the exact opposite. It's like black writer, black producer, black director, you know, so that's going to change the content and the context so much, you know. But yeah, so I think, you know, being a woman in horror is one, it's a really exciting time right now. You know, there is just so much content that's coming out. There's just so many movies. Some of the best movies of this past decade of horror have been starring women. You know, we've seen The Babadook and It Follows, you know, which are the two prime examples. Us, another huge movie that came out starring a woman. And, you know, this idea of being a woman in horror for right now, which I think is going to last, I think it has longevity, that it's not just a trend that's going on right now,
Right.
especially since younger generations grew up with like American Horror Story. There's like a whole group of young girls that are super, which always shocks me to see teenage girls talking about American Horror Story like
Yeah.
that, you know?
Yeah.
And all I can think about is like, man, when you guys get into your like 20s and 30s and you guys grew up on this, and American Horror Story is so feminine. It's such a
Yes.
feminine kind of a thing, you know, or Scream Queens, another very feminine viewing, feminine lensed kind of a thing. And to see those girls grow up into that with this love of horror.
Yeah.
So many examples, having so many different kinds of media for them. One, I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Because I mean, I didn't grow up in a bad time for horror. I mean, I had like, I mean, my stuff was I Know What You Did Last Summer and stuff
Right.
like that, which is not the best, but you know, I mean, it was something. That was when horror was sort of turning a corner and becoming self-referential in itself, you
Yeah.
know. And so now, though, it's so exciting because I feel like there's just so much more being said of substance, our
Yeah.
experiences, our lives, our viewpoints, which has not really ever been spotlighted before.
For sure, for sure. And I think, like, of course, as Gen X, as I get older, as my generation gets older and more people come in from the younger generation, the better it'll get, But like, it was, like the first time I went to Crypticon, some fucking dude, because I'm not goth. I don't dress goth. I don't have any. I have like one tattoo that you can't even see unless I'm wearing a tank top. And some dude actually said to me, like, "Oh, you don't look like the kind of woman who likes horror films." And I'm like, "Well, what does that mean?" And
Yeah.
when I said that to him, he's like, "Well, I just mean like, but like, why are you here?" I'm like, "'Cause I love horror films." And he's like, "Oh, well, what's your favorite?" Which is just like, that's always, whenever a dude says it to me in that tone, I consider it a challenge. And this is not just me being like reactive to something. This is me having worked at a video store and having worked at a comic book store and having to deal with this shit all the time. And so I just was like, "Well, what subgenre are we talking about?" And he was like, "Whoa, I mean." And I'm like, "Well, do you want me to name my favorite shark movie? Do you want me to name my favorite, And I'm like, "I got like what you can't just ask me one." And then he was just kind of like, "Oh, I." And then he
Yeah.
like kind of turned and I like just left because I was like, "I can't with this." But and it, oh,
I get,
sorry.
no,
Please.
no, no. I was just saying I get that stuff all the time. All the time, yeah.
Like what do you, why are you even saying this to me? But also when I went to Fantastic Fest last year, which was amazing, and I would love to go every year if I could make it happen, but it was so, I came out of Suspiria and I was just like floating and just fucking in love with that movie. And I walked out and a lot of times the first thing people ask you when you see them in the lobby is, "What did you just see? What did what'd you think?" And so literally at Fantastic Fest, anytime some guy of my age or older said, "What'd you see? What'd you like?" And I said, "Suspiria is my favorite movie that I've seen." They're like, "Ugh, did you see the original though?" And I'm like, "Yes. Yes. I'm a huge Argento fan. I've seen all of his films and I love Suspiria. This is still an amazing movie. Argento's movie is still a great movie.
Yeah.
This is something totally different. But you know, when I said that to younger guys, they're like, "Oh yes, Spirit was really good," you know, and or they would be like, "Oh yeah, that's really, why'd you think that?" You know, it's just like a different way of interacting with people that doesn't make them feel like they're being tested, or like I'm not, you know, like they're not a good enough fan, or like they
Yeah.
don't, I couldn't possibly know what I'm talking about if I love this one because the original's so great.
Right.
Yes.
Like the irony of that is like how many guys complain that there aren't enough women, you know, who are into it, and it's just like, well, with the way that you like talk to me, I mean, like, you
Yeah.
think more women want to get
I'm
into
gonna
you?
tell you, you probably know more than you think you know, because they're just too afraid to tell you that they like it, you know?
Yeah, you know, and it's so like, you know, to say like, well, I've never met another girl that's into horror movies, and it's like, you probably have. It's just that they don't want to talk to you because you're lame, like, you know,
God.
and it's so frustrating. But speaking of your fan knowledge, you're doing like a whole Stephen King like experience.
Well, that is actually Bob Foster's project from City of Geek, and he asked me and Adrian Clark, who's one of my good friends, and TJ Tranchell, who is a horror author, he writes novels. He asked us all to participate in it, and I was like, great. And I'm sort of repurposing those videos because he's taking our video pieces and sort of chopping them up into like one master YouTube video. So then what I'm doing is just repurposing it on I Love Splatter as well, because why not, you know? I actually did go through and rewatch all the Stephen King adaptations about 6 years ago, and that's all on I Love Splatter
Oh.
as well. I watched all the Craven movies at one point. But yeah, and then the thing that I'm doing on I Love Splatter though is I'm rewatching all of my horror DVDs from A to Z because I have like not all horror, but in total, I think I have like 939 DVDs. And so like at this point, you know, I mean, I've been collecting them for like, you know, I'm very old. I've been collecting them for a long time. So it's not that unusual, but you know how it is, like you get stuff for free or you buy something, you don't watch it again. And so I'm like, yeah, why not? This is a fun thing. And I'm just sort of cataloging what I remember versus what it actually is after I rewatch it, and seeing how they hold up. Like one that definitely did not hold up is An American Werewolf in Paris, which I loved when it came out, and like mostly because Julie Delpy, I'm just in love with Julie Delpy and I have been forever. But her and Tom Everett Scott are adorable, but like, ugh, it is a problem. It is
I
definitely.
remember that movie. I haven't seen that movie in years. Yeah, I remember that. I mean, to do so many, to go back on so many films, one, I commend you. That's incredible. I mean, that's and it's just interesting to see like your taste, you know. It's such a sort of a like a personal thing of being like, did I really like this? Why did I like this? You know, and so because recently I had to downsize all of my DVDs, you know, and like going back through it and being like, you really liked this? Why? What were you going through at this moment?
Yeah, I kind of expect to have a stack to like get, you know, resell back to Amazon or something at the end of this, which will take me years because I'm only in Army of Darkness. Like Army of Darkness was the last one I did. So I'm only in the A's. But you know, that's a good thing about having your own blog and not getting paid to do it. It's just like, oh, I don't have a deadline. I can just whatever I feel like write about it.
What was the reason though? Like, was there anything that happened where you were just like, I really want to do this huge
This huge insane project. No, well, I was thinking about doing a podcast, which like all my friends have been encouraging me to do because, as we know, as you know, the podcast world is full of straight white dudes, and so you know, people are like, we need more women to talk about this stuff, and we need more women who love horror, and specifically more Gen X women, you know. And I'm like, yeah, you know. It could be fun, but I don't know. And so then I thought, I just don't know if I have the capacity for a podcast right now. So, which by the way, I commend you for doing yours and doing the YouTube videos as well. I can't, like, it's breaking my mind how you are finding the motivation and the time to do that. But long story short, too late. I was like, what if I just start an Instagram instead? And what if I just do Instagram stories? Because that is something that I can record easily on my phone. I can edit it on my phone very quickly. I don't have to mess with like complicated edits or fucking, YouTube upload or trying to build an audience. I'm a marketer, so I know how to run ads to get people to follow me. So that's what I've been doing. And so in order to sort of like kickstart that, I needed some kind of project other than I'm just going to talk about everything I watch because I watch a lot of stuff. I watch so much stuff that I don't have time to talk about all the stuff that I
No,
watch.
that's so smart. That's so smart to do the Instagram stories, And so you can have this sort of catalog, and they don't have to be long. You don't have to edit them. You don't have to do, any of the kind of setup or anything like that. 'Cause like, doing the YouTube and the podcast stuff, the learning curve for me was so high. Like learning how to edit, how to, do thumbnails and sound and like all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Like it was a lot. But the Instagram thing is so cool. There's like a whole horror community on Instagram,
And they're
you know?
incredible, and they're incredibly supportive
Yeah.
of women as well. I mean, I see some stupid comments, but for the most part, like everybody's very supportive. Everybody loves everybody else. So yeah, and then I also write about it just for the old school people who like to read the blog, maybe don't want to go on Instagram or whatever. But yeah, so I was thinking about that, and also like just I'm a little thin. I don't want to say thin-skinned, but I'm feeling pretty raw this year, and I didn't really want to open myself up to a lot of commentary if I didn't have to. And for instance, I don't know if you've been listening to the Shudder She Kills podcast, but it's all women. It's all just women talking about horror, women writers, women directors. It's hosted by Adrienne Barbeau, so she kind of weighs in, but she doesn't really do the interviews. They sort of pair two women together. But there's an episode with Karen Kusama and I think it's Emily Deschanel. And Karen Kusama is amazing, and she is also kind not I don't even want to say political because that's not even the right word, but she speaks her mind. And so she was talking about, Jennifer's Body, but she was also talking about how whether she wants it to or not, the film she's making is reflective of in some way of what's going on. And she was talking about The Invitation, and then she was, just talking about Kavanaugh, the Kavanaugh hearings, and fucking 45. I'm not even gonna say his name, but like, she was talking about how that the Kavanaugh hearings specifically are very traumatic for women. All the women who were she knew who were watching it were very emotional, and then, just sort of talking about that, talking about the themes in horror film, how they can mean something bigger, what women fear, et cetera, et cetera. If you look at the fucking comments on Shudder,
Yeah.
in particular for that episode and on iTunes, it's just, so many men that are like, shut up,
Oh
just
my
talk
God.
about the whore. It doesn't need to be political, it's just like,
That's so
people.
frustrating. It's so frustrating. One is because, and I stand by this with every inch of my body, like Karen Kusama is like one of the most underrated directors of our
Yes.
time. People do not res put as much respect on her as they should. Like, I understand the whole thing because Jennifer's Body was mismarketed.
Yes.
The whole thing, Jennifer's Body was mismarketed and The Invitation was
It was
undermarketed.
buried. Yeah. Nobody even knows when I'm like, have you seen the invitation? People are like, what? I'm sorry. What?
And like when you watch those films, luckily, I watched Jennifer's Body years later after I'd like kind of sort of forgotten even what the movie was about. I think it seemed I rewatched The Invitation and I was like, oh my God, this movie is so good. And then I was like, I should go back and watch Jennifer's Body. And the movies are so layered and they're so smart. And Kusama is doing such amazing work and people. It frustrates me so much that people do not want to appreciate her, it feels like. Like people don't want to give her credit, which is so bizarre. And yeah, I read the reviews for Destroyer and
Man,
how.
I love Destroyer. I
See,
just watched that. Yeah.
this is the thing. So many of my female friends love Destroyer, and then I read the reviews, mostly by dudes, and they were like, "Oh, it was so sad and dark, and it took itself so seriously." And it's like, okay, but like, okay, we had a movie like The Dark Knight where it's like a guy in a bat costume takes himself very
It's
seriously.
yes, it's a dark thriller with a fucking female lead. A female detective lead. Like
Yeah, it was so bizarre. Like people were, so many reviewers were like, "Well, it's just so, what was it? You know, it's not, it has no levity to it. It has no, and it's just like, well, maybe it's not
two.
supposed to have levity to it. I don't understand this. You know, it's such a strange sort of a thing. So I have to ask, since we're coming up on an hour,
Oh, yeah.
the conversation's been so, no. It's been great. Thank you so much. We could talk about this for hours. I know we can." So I have to ask, top Stephen King movie of all time, stop adaptation. You can do TV, you can do films.
Yeah, well, I love Carrie, because as previously mentioned, I'm a De Palma fangirl, which I get a lot of shit for from other women because
What? Really?
oh yeah, because he's definitely sexist, but like I think I don't know. I like to think, of course I'd never know because I can't talk to the guy, but that he's doing it with a purpose. He's not just doing it to be like sleazy. And also he was making movies in the late 70s and 80s, and that's what movies were like. So but I love Carrie. I think he did a fantastic job with that adaptation. I love the fucking split screen. It blows my mind every time I think about Sissy Spacek being 27 when she made that movie. It's crazy. I also really like Needful Things, which is one that not a lot of people talk about. I thought they did a good job with that adaptation. And then Storm of the Century, which he wrote for the screen, which I thought was great. So,
Yes, yeah. I haven't seen Needful Things, but Storm of the Century is one of my favorite ones. And when I was watching Castle Rock, there were some Storm of the Century references. I was like the only person like, "That's a Storm of the Century reference."
I
I don't know
love
what
that
that
one.
is. Yeah.
I love that one. I think Colm Feore is amazing as the villain in that. He's so good.
Yeah, that's an underrated classic. I mean, the thing though is that like Stephen King is set, like his grandchildren are set, his great grandchildren are set,
Yes.
because they're
But
adapting.
he still keeps writing. He still keeps making books. The dude just cannot stop.
I'm listening right now to Salem's Lot on tape, not tape, like you know, like I have
Audio, what do they
audio.
call it? Audio something.
I'm listening to that, and which is so interesting. One is because it's like this man can really take this one small town and turn so many different. How many stories can you make about a small town?
He's the best at that, though.
He's
He's
so
the
good.
best at like developing all these insane side characters, you know, where you're like, wait, what? Yeah.
I also have to say thank you so much to coming to my last show. So for the audience out there, I have a live show, Nocturnal Emissions, once a month. And I mean, it was so gracious to volunteer. You had no idea what I was going to do to you. And it was the funnest thing. I put this mouth guard in you and made you slobber all over yourself.
Not stop laughing. There was something about you put this thing in your mouth and you think you're going to be able to just talk normally. And then it was like I couldn't even get one word out before like laughing so hard that I honestly thought I was going to pee my pants. Like it was just too ridiculous. It was like almost unreal amount of ridiculousness.
I mean, the whole thing is, it's like, I don't know, I feel like that sort of sadistic game show host is like
part of your persona. Yeah.
Part of my persona.
Yeah.
But I mean, you were so game for it. And like, as soon as the pictures came out, that was the part, that was the thing that killed me. When the pictures came out of you, I was like on the floor shaking because it's just a series of photographs of you just getting worse and just like getting worse and worse.
Yeah, it's so funny. I put those photos on my Facebook, and this guy that I sort of know was like commented like, "Oh, it's so great that you shared these so you to like basically combat the embarrassment of them." And I'm like, "No, I listen. I'm a 47-year-old woman. Like, there is very little that is going to embarrass me at this point. And photos of me with a mouth guard thing in are like not the thing that is gonna do it. You know, it's just like, I look crazy. I don't care. It's fine." Yeah.
But it was so much fun. It was so funny. I don't know. I feel like I want to do that every show. Even though now people have seen it. Now people are like, we're never going back to this show ever.
We're not again. Volunteering. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, but I have to say thank you so much.
Sure.
And like hearing Colleen was like losing it the entire time.
Yes.
Nobody thought it was funnier than Colleen. Just like, how do you know you have a good friend? You know?
All those guys that were there for the burlesque show were like, what is this? What's happening?
Oh, God. Thank you so much. So before you go, though, can we get places to find you? Where are you? Where can we look at your stuff?
Indeed. I am on Instagram and Twitter, both at Posie Girl, P-O-S-I-E Girl, and I Love Splatter. And then iloveblatter.com and then 3imaginarygirls.com for film reviews, other than horror. Horror movies are up there also, but I also cover SIFF every year and just try to watch as many films as I can because that's what I love.
And then you'll be at Crypticon also. Are you doing panels?
Yes, I will be at Crypticon. As mentioned, I will be hosting the Dee Wallace interview, and I will be hosting the Ray Wise and Cheryl Lee interview. I'm a huge Twin Peaks fan, so I'm very excited about that. And then I'm doing a panel about, actually, it's called Shifting Perspectives, and it's about things like Jennifer's Body and Lords of Salem, so movies that the perception has changed as time has gone on. If you remember, maybe you don't, but when you mentioned Jennifer's Body, when we hosted The Descent, which is making me think that it might be 3 or 4 years ago, I didn't like it. And then I read this whole thing about the marketing for it and I rewatched it again. And while I still am bothered a little bit by Diablo's script, I think like that language is the thing that's really distracting me. You know, the you're so jelly. Yeah. Okay. Or jello, I guess is what she says. But like all that dialogue is kind of the thing that distracts me. I do appreciate it more. And I think it's because when I first saw it, I totally went into it thinking it was marketed towards men, you know, and I was like, whatever, it's just Megan Fox in a fucking, you know, short skirt, like prancing around. Doing that thing. But no, I think it's much smarter now that I've rewatched it. And Lords of Salem, same way. I hated Lords of Salem when it came out, but rewatching it now, I'm like, you know what? Those old witches are fucking amazing. And Dee Wallace is one of them. And Patricia Quinn is another one. And it's just like, you know what? Like, despite its shortcomings with its leading lady, I think it actually is pretty interesting. Although I wish, just like I wish with Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, that they weren't worshiping a male Satan.
Yeah.
Like, damn it.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues.
Satan up in here? Come on.
Or at least like the traditional Satan that has like boobs and a penis, you know what I mean? Something. So yeah, spice it up, you know?
So I'm doing that panel where we're going to talk about that. And then I'm also doing a panel with Colleen called Things That Go Bump in the Night, where we're going to talk about the Haunted House movies and series. And I'm doing another panel that's sort of based on the one we did for Emerald City Comic Con about streaming horror, online communities, Joe Bob Briggs, who I don't particularly care for, but a lot of other people do. Just talking about that. So
nice
stuff going on.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here and being part of this. Thank you so much for coming on and making the time. I really appreciate you. And hopefully everybody will check out your stuff. Hey, kiddos. All right, so that was today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. You can find me on the internets at Twitter, NOCEMISS. You can find me on Facebook, Nocturnal Emissions Show on Facebook, Nocturnal Emissions Show at Gmail. You can find me all over the place. Just get a Ouija board and just summon me. Just get a board, a spirit board. You know what my number is. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to our sponsors, and thank you so much to Amy for coming on. And I will see you guys on the next episode. Bye.